It's Tuesday. This is College Football 134, the Covers Podcast, diving into every inch of college football. He is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer, and we have a full weekend of football to react to before we preview week three. Andrew, on Saturday, I got your full wrath. Are you over Friday night yet?
Never. I don't think I'll ever recover from that loss. There's just nothing like seeing an underbet destroyed by college football overtime rules, particularly when these teams just struggled to score anything for 60 minutes. And then within two plays, your bet was just sunk. It was tough, but we move on. We move forward. It was a bit of a tough week for me. I had a couple of really bad beats, but man, that's early season college football betting for you. And we're happy with most of the process. So we're going to keep moving forward.
We are happy with most of the process, and I will publicly admit, I've been surprised by how happy I've been with the Saturday morning process. And so, like, that's, I bet we discuss Northwestern football this coming Saturday morning when we're live at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. On that note, before we dive into everything this weekend, I should rattle off the key podcast verbs. Please, everyone, subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms, now including iTunes. Apple finally embraced us. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it, all of the verbs. Verbs, verbs, verbs. This past weekend, the verb that you have to acknowledge is Notre Dame botched it. Notre Dame faceplanted. Notre Dame shot itself in the foot, losing to Northern Illinois, a game I think you and I glossed over here at College Football 134, seeing neither value nor intrige in that four-touchdown spread. Whoops.
Nope. Yep, I guess so, right? Like, 28 points seemed reasonable, right?
When it you was, looked at it? Yeah. It's a 28-point number where you don't want to bet it because you're thinking, oh, a backdoor cover or Notre Dame's offense doesn't look great. And it did look, Notre Dame's offense looked terrible against Northern Illinois. The defense played well enough. It got out schemed for a few big plays, but I went and checked. Northern Illinois gained 98 yards on its first drive, most of them a one-chunk play. Got two field goals on short drives. After those first three possessions, Notre Dame's defense held the Huskies to 209 yards on 50 plays, 4.2 yards per play. Notre Dame's defense was more or less fine. The Irish passing, I'll get into that more later. It was ugly. It was bad. And despite that embarrassing loss, Notre Dame is still just 3-1 to make the college football playoff at BetMGM. Welcome to the 12-team playoff era, Andrew.
Yeah, they still have a shot, obviously, at 3-1. But I'm a little bearish on Notre Dame at those on. Sorry if you can hear my baby screaming in the background there. We're going to one nap these days, so we're going to roll forward like anything else. Notre Dame, I think the Irish have to basically win out at this point. 11-1 seems like a really, like, I think they're in at 11-1. And that will include a win over what looks like an improved USC defense at the very end of the season, a rivalry game. Like, the committee will obviously love that right at the end of the season if they can pull that off. 11-1, they're in. 10-2, on the other hand, seems a little iffy considering how much the SEC is going to push for getting, I don't know, 5 or 6 teams in the playoff this year. And the loss to a MAC team could really hurt them in the long run. They're also playing another MAC team in 2 weeks, Miami of Ohio, who is the favorite to win the MAC, which is going to be really interesting and have another strong defense. But we were talking about this, so I just started scrolling to make the playoff odds, and I saw Northern Illinois at +8,000, and I made a bet.
That's a huge note. 80-1 when they have what should be, you have to imagine across the entire season, and I can't think of another opportunity, the preeminent, the top group of five win in the country this season.
That was legitimately my thinking when I made that bet. There is going to be no team in the group of five that has a better non-con win than that. And we overlooked the MAC heading into the season when it came to these group of five playoff teams because it's the MAC, right?
Yeah, I don't know that we overlooked it. We knew to discount it. I did have a Notre Dame fan DM me after the loss on Saturday as I was getting ready for Texas State UTSA, another flop of a game. And he's like, why is the MAC in none of these group of five odds? I'm like, it's because it's the MAC. Nobody thinks they're going to make a playoff team.
And and those early week games, like, crazy stuff happens every single year. You get two teams in the MAC championship game with 2, 3, sometimes even 4 losses. So it's tough, but I also, like, it's a bit of a flyer, but it's also, a little bit of value there because of the 80-1, and I picked Northern Illinois to win the MAC this season. If they can somehow rattle off a one-loss season, considering some of the other schedules, these group of five teams, like we talked about Memphis, we talked about App State, who
Boise
just got
State,
crushed in
App State, Boise State, Texas State.
Very tough schedules for them. So two losses could be the group of five automatic bid in the playoff. So if Northern Illinois can somehow get through all of that craziness in the MAC and pull that out, I wouldn't be surprised if they got that group of five bid.
And I just pulled up their schedule for kicks and giggles. It is worth noting that Northern Illinois heads to NC State in 3 weeks. They get this week off. They get Buffalo. Buffalo is terrible. Yep. And then they head to North Carolina State. And, oh, boy, it's Buffalo, North Carolina State, UMass. So Northern Illinois can kind of ignore two games moving forward and just look at North Carolina State.
I am increasingly
liking your flyer there of 80-1.
About NC State's defense. You were like, this is a fraudulent defense. And then we saw this game against Tennessee over the weekend. A quick recap here. People thought, like, this will be a good test for Nico. And they just made that defense look so bad. So if Northern Illinois can kind of just do their thing and play that ball control game, it could be another interesting outcome this week.
I will remember that you have that 80-1. That is, I like that. I see it more as a value play than even a flyer. In my opinion, flyers are, well, this would be fun. You have some good value there. That is good to know. I will keep that in mind. And now the other big moment this weekend had nothing to do with the group of five. Holy cow, Texas took it to Michigan. Who could have ever seen that coming? Andrew, do you know anyone who expected the Longhorns to win easily while the Wolverines repeatedly turned quality possessions into scoring territory failures?
No, I've never heard anyone talk to me like that before whatsoever. And if you're expecting a compliment from me, you're going to have to go somewhere else.
Wow.
Once a week I get it, you were right. That's just private. You can't bring that up on the pod. That's a private message. I can't believe you're right. No, it was a good call by you. That Texas offense, I think once it got to 14-0, I was like, there was no chance that Michigan can come back. And I think that was in the first quarter still.
It was over.
It was over. It was over early. And you saw it right away when Texas was caring about that game. Davis Warren could not move the football. They couldn't run the football. It was ugly. And to think that Alex Orji was worse than Davis Warren, like, they're, I think Michigan's in trouble, not just for the rest of the season, but like it's a tough looking future for the Wolverines for a little bit moving forward.
At the very least, they're going to have to figure out that quarterback position probably via transfer portal next winter, which is, and this is a longer conversation than we should get into. It is something that you can blame Jim Harbaugh for because he was not working the transfer portal. He was working the NFL coaching openings. And by the time he left, the transfer portal was done. There was no quarterback of note left. You can, and it's a conversation to get into at a different point. There were nine programs who had to hire a coach late this year. Those nine programs are currently 2-9 against the spread against FBS teams. Hiring somebody late these days is catastrophic for your program.
Yeah, it's really tough.
We shouldn't go down that tangent. We should focus on our week two recap. There was, of course, one other huge game. Nebraska did exactly what we expected Nebraska to do against Colorado. Specifically, the Cornhuskers defensive line wrecked the Buffaloes game plan. Though six sacks fell short of our Saturday laugh for an over 8.5.
So close.
It would have been more than that if the game had been remotely competitive.
Yeah. Like we said it before, right? Like, just stop betting Colorado. Like, this is exactly what we said would happen. That offensive line is still a mess. Another guy who just is not doing a good enough job when it's coming to building that roster. I think he's probably looking for, I don't know if he'll get it, but he probably will because of the numbers he generates, but he's probably looking for the next big job. He's not worried about what's going on that Boulder team. Like, when Shedeur Sanders is gone, do you think Dion's going to be there much longer? I don't know at this
much
point.
Longer, no, but I don't see him going to a better job. Teams, programs typically don't want to hire somebody who goes 4-8 and 5-7. Like, typically that's not a recipe for
I know
PR,
but people,
when you hire a coach.
But people just can't get enough of him. I can't understand it. I just can't. And we can talk more about that in a second, but
Yeah. It's nonsense. We did get that laugh about over under on sacks. That was our live, our Saturday morning show, 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. Join us before week three this week. We will be discussing all of the games. Today, we're just going to touch on some of the game of the weeks and then our bets, games of the week, excuse me, and then our bets. And the games of the week are different kinds of pickings this week. We're going to lead off with a nod to producer Jameson, who may or may not be a distraught Florida fan. And we're gonna discuss Texas A&M at Florida mid-afternoon on ABC. Texas A&M is a four-point favorite, over-under of 47.5. My biggest item here is to watch for an early A&M lead. I think I mentioned this after the Miami shellacking. The Gators fall behind. I will be live betting Texas A&M simply on the thought that Florida has quit, to producer Jameson's chagrin. That's the lesson I'm looking to learn this week.
Yeah, both teams desperately would love a win to open conference play. Both started with losses to good teams. Both won their cupcake FCS matchups, but failed to cover. I think they both were like 40-point favorites and won by 37 or close to 40. I worry about what this Florida offense is going to be able to generate against this Texas A&M defense, which played pretty well against Notre Dame. But now we're seeing maybe that Notre Dame offense may be not as good as we were thinking after that last matchup against NIU. But I really just don't love the depth on this Gators team. I'll probably be taking a look at their team total as we head towards the weekend. Not official play for me yet, but maybe I'll fire on something when we come to the live show on Saturday. But
let's
note, you are considering
fading Florida's offense. I am considering betting A&M on a live spread. And we have producer Jameson hopping in our chat telling us Florida money line. Yes, folks, he is a distraught Gators fan. There's no other way to phrase that. We're simply glad he's not a Colorado Buffaloes fan. We should. It's games of the week. It's prime time on CBS. I'm tired of talking about Colorado, but it's prime time on CBS. What am I supposed to do? They head to Colorado State. Everybody remembers last year's dramatic game went well into the early Sunday morning. The item that's jumping out to me, this is, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon. This should be, I'm hoping this is in your podcast feeds by the end of the night. What jumps out to me is today this line moved. It was +7.5 this morning. When you and I were getting show prep done, it was at +7. I am seeing +6.5s on the board. I was hoping to see a +8, I tell you.
I was too. And maybe we'll get there. Maybe once this is it. Once again, stop betting Colorado. Except or, now we kind of want you to, yeah, keep betting Colorado because
help
we
us
want
out.
That, we want that better number. You guys keep betting them. So we'll wait this. If you are looking to fade Colorado seriously in this matchup, wait for the, or sorry, if you're looking to fade Colorado against Colorado State, wait for the line. This action that you're talking about, this is obviously sharp money that's coming in early in the week to move this line down to 6.5. The public will get more involved come Friday night, Saturday morning, and that's when the line should come back in our favor for those looking to fade the Buffs in this spot.
There are other ways to fade the Buffs. I want to lean into one of those. Now, everybody remembers last year's game for when it was a double, triple over. I don't think it went to triple. I think it was just double overtime.
It was double overtime, yeah.
There's a revenge factor here. If you remember last year, Jay Norvell called this game personal. Deion Sanders called this game personal because Jay Norvell pointed out that he prefers to take his hat and sunglasses off when at a press conference. It was all too much drama. And then Colorado State like took it to Colorado. It was a great game, but there's something going on. This is a chance for revenge. Now, but on the field, there's going to be a curious dynamic in that Colorado's secondary is its defensive strength, not the defensive line. Strong defensive line play has been our Colorado fade so far. Yes. North Dakota State, Nebraska, stronger defensive lines. Colorado State has a starting secondary of 5 seniors. It's a secondary 2 deep with 9 seniors. I will be curious to see if Shedeur Sanders navigates that coverage. He has the arm strength, but will he handle that coverage? If he makes one mistake, the bet I'm about to lay out here will be golden. If he makes no mistakes and Colorado scores quickly, and let's remember, the Buffaloes have no run game. They no longer pretend to have a run game. So if they only score quickly, my bet here should be golden. Colorado State has a strong offensive line, one that should push around Colorado. Braden Fowler-Nicolosi and Torrey Horton are potent. Jay Norvell has been looking ahead to this game since August. Look at how Colorado State fared against Texas and Northern Colorado. They were already planning for this game. I am taking a Colorado State team total over 24.5. Available right now at neg 115 at DraftKings. I think they've been planning for this game for more than a month and a half. I think they are an offense-driven team, and I think Shedeur Sanders generally makes one critical mistake a game, which will only elevate the Rams' point total.
I'd say it's probably more likely more than one, and we're going to get a couple of short fields there. I really like this play as well. I'm not just blindly tail you on it, but I am not going to be fading it by any sense of the word there. I really think we're going to wait and we're going to fade Colorado again. Like you said, that defensive line play is really going to hurt them again in the end there.
And then the other game that we are highlighting as a game of the week this weekend, again, it's weird pickings. There are many great games, but it's weird pickings. There's only one with a name. The Backyard Brawl, West Virginia at Pittsburgh, mid-afternoon on ESPN2. West Virginia is a 2.5-point favorite, over-under 60.5. I always love a good rivalry. Was it Iowa State last week where I was talking like,
yeah,
this game matters because coworkers are going to get angry at each other. Brothers are going to get angry at each other. This is why we love college football. The Backyard Brawl is more of that genre.
Yeah, and like we just talked Colorado State too. These rivalry games can just get weird. Like they're just more intense and more tightly contested on a regular basis. Very interesting matchup here. This opened at 3.5 and has been bet down to 2.5. Obviously, West Virginia looked overmatched against Pitt, and then they kind of did their thing Penn. Yes, Penn State. My apologies. They did its thing against FCS Albany, but didn't cover. This is another like huge spread that they won by like 30 points, didn't cover the 40 or something like that. Pitt, on the other hand, that offense is, I know you're going to jump in on me this. The offense has looked very good. They covered as 24-point faves against Kent State. You're going to say to me about the game flow here in a second. I know that, but they did get the job done, was all said and done, and they pulled those starters basically at the start of the fourth quarter anyway. And was it not the start?
This is something you and I disagree on. Pitt was in a game against Kent State for the better part of three quarters. And you go ahead and finish your Pitt defense.
Oh, it's just Eli Holstein has looked really good, which was not something I was really expecting heading into the season. 638 yards, 6 touchdowns, 2 picks. They have balance too, which has made those Pitt offenses the last few years look better. Desmond Reed has looked really, really good so far as well. And that balance can make this Pitt offense really dangerous. That West Virginia defense has obviously some question marks. So tell me why you hate, hate Pitt in this spot.
I am on fade Pitt. Actually, okay. If I scroll, I don't know where that, some of my notes here is just literally in big letters, fade Pitt. Trailing 27-6 against Cincinnati is not a badge of honor because you came back to win. Trailing 27-6 against Cincinnati is what the kids call a red flag. Cincinnati is probably the worst team in the Big 12. 2 weeks ago, Kent State stressed Pitt for the better part of three quarters. We can disagree on how that game ended. The fact of the matter is Pitt was in a game for 2.5, nearly 40 minutes. Kent State this past week got physically dominated by St. Francis of Pennsylvania. All due respect to the Red Flash. Yes, that's the nickname. I looked it up. The Red Flash. I love it. But it's worse than two D3 teams in Bill Connolly's ranking of the top 764 teams in college football. You've heard me mention that before. You go and pull it up. They're behind Mount Union. They're behind North Central of Illinois. They're also behind Temple, which is really just a moment for us to note how bad Temple is. +17.5 against Coastal Carolina this weekend. By the way, suddenly I'm realizing this has turned into a dismissal of Pennsylvania football teams. That was not my intention.
Yes, it was. Don't take it back now. Don't walk it back.
Pitt struggling to Kent State, and then Kent State having St. Francis take it to it. That says something to me about Pittsburgh. I will back Neil Brown. I will back a physical ground game led by Garrett Green and a very experienced offensive line. Yes, we're only in games of the week, but I'm going to have my second play of the day. I'm taking West Virginia by 2.5, available at neg 110 at Caesars, because I think they're going to simply wear out Pittsburgh. I think Pat Narduzzi has a problem developing on his hands, whether it's early this season, late this season, or next year. I think Pat Narduzzi might be cooked.
Ooh, that's a really hot take there. He's going to be cooked if he loses the Backyard Brawl here?
I think this is going a very clear direction.
Interesting. Neil Brown is obviously a very good coach, and you mentioned it. West Virginia has two solid running backs in C.J. Donaldson and Jaheim White. they can play that clock control game if they want to and keep the ball out of Holstein's hands. But like I said, I liked that balance that I've seen from Penn's offense at this point. You say they've been in battles, but they have battled hard. Once again, these rivalry games are weird. Like, I guess at the 2.5, I'd probably like West Virginia at that number, but maybe the total and the over could be the better play here when all is said and done.
You know, I'm going to hope this line gets to 3.5 by Saturday. So you can come in against me. You can be telling me that you got the best number, because we all know what happens when you and I disagree.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You've got my number right now, buddy. We'll
I see will. How it goes. I will reiterate one more time. We will be live Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern, before week 3 kicks off. That is our pride and joy. If I have to get up early, folks, the least you can do is come help my ego a little bit. Close listeners will notice we haven't suggested bets on all of these biggest games. Well, I suppose I did on 2 of the 3. That's because I saw value. Gambling on college football needs to focus on finding value. As we get into our best bets, that is our intention. I will note last week, I went only 5-4. Cam Rising's finger injury cost me 2 bets on Utah. I'm now at 9-10 this season, down still 1.78 units. My 0-4 in week 0 still has me in the red, but I'm battling back.
Yeah, yeah, only 5-4. Give me a break. I went 2-5 for negative 3.4 units. It has been a rough start to my college football season, just 6-13 for negative 8.48 units. So please fade away if you see fit. Honestly, though, like, I don't feel too bad about many of the handicaps, besides maybe App State, which just looked awful within 5 minutes of that game. But awful, brutal beat in the Northwestern game. I felt it was a bad beat for that for the Davis Warren passing prop. He had like 78 yards going into that final drive and then threw the ball the entire way down the field when Texas didn't care, when they probably could have run out the clock if the play calling was a little more exciting on that last drive. But yeah, Oregon messed around too much in the first half and they still ended with 37 points on the, so I missed the over 40.5 team total on that one.
You know, you say all this, and yes, be a little critical of yourself. This is how we improve. But you were all over expecting that Iowa State spread to get to 3.5. It did.
And it did. Yeah,
and you had the money line all along as well. So the handicapping process has some validity.
Exactly. So I feel good about the process at this point. It's some tough beats, but we're going to just put the work in, and we're still going to get there. Like you said, we're going to bounce back. So, Douglas, start us off. What do you got for your best bets this week?
Well, I'm going to Ooh. Thursday, and it's because it's a Thursday game that I'm making this play. I don't usually bet on Texas State. In fact, last week I bet on UTSA, or at least I argued for UTSA.
Though. There was another lead.
You were right. You were right.
Thank
Texas
you.
State.
Jameson, clip it. Clip it. Clip it.
Crushed UTSA. I was wrong. You were right. But that game being a blowout is further reason I am taking Texas State at plus 105 on Thursday night against Arizona State. That's available at DraftKings. Now, I want to note, on Sunday, I played this on thecovers.com/picks/NCAAF, our free picks page. I got it at plus 110 on Sunday. It's always good to check that page. It's always good to be working on college football while the corporate football is still on the TV.
So boring.
It's so boring. I don't understand how anybody watches the No Fun League. We're out here talking about rivalries in Texas State, Arizona State on a Thursday. Here's the thing about this game. Arizona State played until 11 p.m. local time on Saturday night. A stressful game. 113 and a half hours later, they have to kick off. I intend to go back through the last few seasons and see if there's any other Thursday turnarounds like this. It's absurd. In the NBA, this is called a schedule loss. Coaches acknowledge, oh, we're going to lose that game, or our schedule just has us in such a bad position. Arizona State should take that approach. I'm being serious when I lay out what Arizona State's week probably is. I'm not trying to exaggerate. I'm being dead serious. Saturday's game ended at 11:10 p.m. local time. They went out. They enjoyed a win. Hopefully not too much. Hopefully everybody stayed smart. They went out. They enjoyed a win. Then they slept in a little bit Sunday morning. They went back to the football facilities. They got treatment. They practiced either Sunday afternoon or Monday. You can't do both. So now we're one practice in. Tuesday, they laid out a game plan. Wednesday, a light practice, and then they flew to San Marcos. Thursday, walkthrough game. That's it. So they have two and a half practices and a walkthrough to prep. That's, and kickoff is at 5:30 on Arizona State's bodies. Texas State doesn't have that much more time. Its game ended 5 hours earlier. Its game wasn't stressful. But that five-hour head start, lack of Saturday stress, and lack of travel is more than enough for me to take plus 105 in a game that I would normally make a pick-em. I see a huge edge in this game because the home advantage, the scheduling advantage, if this is normally a pick-em and I'm getting plus 105, I see value.
Yeah, I think Kenny Dillingham is a pretty good coach, and I think he can turn that Arizona State team around. But at this point, they could be one of the – they're in the running for worst Power Four teams in the country right now.
It is not looking good, and giving that lead back to Mississippi State only created further doubt for us in Arizona State. While we're talking about Arizona State, Arizona football, you got any thoughts about another weeknight game?
Yeah, Friday night, we're going Arizona, Kansas State, and my best bet, my first best bet of the week is going to be the over 58 in that matchup. You can get that minus 110 over at Bet365. I think this is just going to be a fun football game for us to watch on Friday night. Much more fun than, say, that Monday nighter in that no fun league the other night. We've got Fifita to McMillan, maybe the best wide receiver QB duo in the entire country going at it. We saw them just fling it all over the place in that game against New Mexico, where Fifita threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns, where 300 of those yards and all of the touchdowns went to McMillan. They obviously just did not care in that game against, I think it was Northern Arizona they played last week. They just didn't throw the ball. They just mailed it in. We don't take much away from that game. They won. They moved on. And you and I this weekend, well, after we finished on Saturdays, please make sure to check us out on Saturday morning live. We watched a lot of Tulane in K-State on Saturday. And that you were talking about Kansas State and being a bit of frauds as well. And that defense, we watched that defense look a little fraudulent in that game, and they were lucky to come away with a win. I thought, obviously, a late turnover, which was fumble. It was a fumble return or it might have been a weird kind of sack up in the air return for a touchdown right at the end of the game. They were going back and forth the whole time, and if not for that return for a touchdown, Kansas State might lose that game to Tulane.
I haven't pulled up win expectancies from this past weekend. Post-game win expectancies, effectively a way of seeing, did you get away with one? I haven't pulled them all up. My instinct says Kansas State wins that game no more than 55% of the time. It might be less than 50%. Tulane gave them far more than Kansas State could handle.
Yeah, and they looked sloppy at times. But also, the other thing we can note about Arizona right now, yes, they have a really good quarterback with a really good wide receiver. But in their first game against New Mexico, they also gave up 39 points to New Mexico. 39 points to New Mexico. That's not good. New Mexico is not a good football team. Kansas State's offense is obviously still a work in progress with Avery Johnson. His completion percentage was okay. His yards per attempt, okay. Two touchdowns. He didn't turn over the ball, which was important. And they were able to run a kind of balanced offense. It was a battle, but they still put up 27 offensive points in that game. So I think they have something to build on there. Arizona, like I said, give a bunch of points. I like the over in this game. I think we're going to be in for a shootout on Friday night.
I like your play here. I'm not going to blindly tail you on it because I want to spend more time with it this week. I will have something on this game by the end of the week. It might be doubting Kansas State's offensive line again. It is doubt of Kansas State as a whole, but also doubt in Arizona because those nine teams I referenced earlier who had to replace their coach mid-January or later, Arizona's one of them. There's a reason Arizona has struggled 0-1 in an FBS play against the spread. Those teams, again, are 2-9 against the spread in FBS play. We'll see how long this trend continues, but I'm noting it because it is something we can cite in their roster construction. It is something underlying in the programs as compared to expectations. I like Kansas State overall in this one instance, but mostly because they're going to outscore them. I like your thought. Now, if I may, I want to take us to Saturday football. And I'm going to make a bet that not many people would expect, a bet that I forgot to put in the show notes in the banner. So I'm going to do that real quick while I vamp, because I am going to bet against an overreaction. I am going to bet against a vast overreaction. Before last weekend, I would have made this line about 14, maybe 14 and a half. Now Notre Dame is favored by only 10 at Purdue. I am going to take Notre Dame by 10 at Purdue, available -108 at DraftKings, partly because that's an overreaction. Gambling 101, no team is as good or as bad as its most recent game. Notre Dame laid an egg against Northern Illinois. No one can deny that. That is not as bad as Notre Dame really is. Second of all, Purdue is susceptible to the pass, which has been Notre Dame's weakness. Maybe this becomes a get-right game for Riley Leonard's downfield approach. More likely, the Irish protect him in a reportedly injured non-throwing shoulder, something Notre Dame left off its injury report on Monday, a problem on its own right since reporters are no longer allowed to ask coaches for injury updates. That injury report is expected to be sincere. So that injury is its own separate subplot. It may be his non-throwing shoulder, but that may also be enough impetus for Notre Dame to lean on their strong running game. They've thrown the ball 2.2% more than Game State would usually expect this season, which is a mistake when you have a backfield led by Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price. They have a good backfield. They should lean on this offensive strength to help correct for this market overreaction.
Yeah, yeah, and we've been talking about bad Power 4 teams. I think Purdue falls in that category as well as one of those teams that could be looking like a pretty sorry season when all is said and done here. I really just want to call you a homer for taking this pick so badly.
This is a mistake, Andrew. I covered Notre Dame for far too long. I have not been a Notre Dame fan since the second lightning delay against South Florida in 2011. I can cite the moment my Notre Dame fandom died. It was when I heard the then sophomores sing the final verses of 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall. Because in that moment, I realized I was more invested into hearing them get you no bottles of beer on the wall than I was in Notre Dame coming back to beat South Florida. That was the moment. So that was 13 years ago. There is no homer here. The Notre Dame photo on my wall is actually Owen Marichek scoring a touchdown against Notre Dame. You know what happened on the next possession, on the next snap of that game? Owen Marichek scored a defensive touchdown. You find me anybody else in history who scored an offensive touchdown and a defensive touchdown on successive snaps in a football game.
Okay, that was passionate. I'll give you that one. And I'm going to be passionate about my next play here as well because it involves a Service Academy team. And you know how I feel about Service Academy teams. We're going with Air Force Baylor. And I was talking to you about this off stage. I was like debating, do I go with Air Force plus the 16 points or do I take the under 41.5? And then I got really sick and went under 21.5. In the first half as Air Force takes on Baylor. First of all, I need to petition the college football gods to make everything bad happen to Baylor for trying to illegally injure my boy Cam Rising, because this is, of course, a Utah pod, and my heart just sank when I was watching. Not only did it sink your bets, it's like I was just like, well, Utah's done then if his hand's broken and his season's over. They're saying it's okay, and hopefully they can just get through this game as they look forward to heading to Stillwater next in week 4, I believe it is. But yeah, so this is a Utah pod. Screw you, Baylor, for trying to screw that up. Anyways, Baylor's offense looks stuck in the mud in that game against Utah. Utah's defense is obviously much better than Air Force's, but 3.7 yards per play. But my big takeaway through two games for Baylor, even though they have Taquan Finn now as their quarterback, they're running the football nearly 75% of the time. I don't know if that was last week was because they just couldn't move the ball through the air at all against Utah. He had a really poor complete. I think he was 9 for 21 in that game.
He was never a great throwing quarterback at Toledo. He's a very fun player, but he was never a pinpoint passer at Toledo. There's a reason Miami of Ohio won the MAC last year.
Yes, exactly. Because they got after him in the MAC championship game and he looked flustered. And that's what happened again. Air Force's defense, like we'll talk a lot about Air Force this season, I'm sure. Taking a step back, or at least I will talk about Air Force. I don't know if you will anymore, but they are definitely taking a step back. They're not as good as they have been the last couple of seasons, but that is mostly due to the offense. They've had to replace 5 offensive linemen this season, which like usually you expect this Air Force team to be full of 5 seniors on that offensive line and carrying the ball for like 5 yards per carry. But now this season, it's less than 4 to start the year, and they've played, I think, Merrimack and San Jose State to this point. So that's not really good, but that doesn't mean they're not going to run the football. Like, yes, Baylor's defenses look good too, but Air Force is going to run the ball. That's just what they do. And Air Force's defense has still been solid, giving up just 13 points per game. And if Baylor is committed to running the football, this isn't a Service Academy game where we bet our Service Academy unders. but it's going to feel like one, at least for the first half. Then I could see Baylor making some adjustments at halftime and maybe pulling away and scoring a little more in the second half. So under 21 and a half in the first half. This is our first unofficial Air Force Academy under of the season.
It makes sense simply based on possession count. And that's the whole, that's a big piece of the logic with all Surface Academy unders, that they're going to tank the possession count. But I want to go off your vengeance against Baylor. For those who didn't see, a hit started before the sideline. It was a fair hit initially. The Baylor defender then pushed Cam Rising a significant ways beyond the sideline. Ended up, it was professional wrestling-esque as Cam Rising is thrown into the water station, cups and jugs everywhere, and injured his hand. We don't know how badly because this is college football,
and
coaches are dodgy with that. We did see him on the sideline afterward. His middle finger and his ring finger, to my eye, were taped together, and he was laughing with teammates. He was smiling and joking. So that was a good sign to me. But, Andrew, I want to ask you, what would you trust more, a Kyle Whittingham injury update or a Magic 8-ball?
Ooh, the 8-ball. I'm going 8-ball.
Yes. This is college football in general, but Kyle Whittingham last season really took it to an extreme where for the first 4, 5, or 6 weeks of the season, every week,
he was questionable.
Cam Rising might be back this week. We'll figure it out before the game. Cam Rising was out the entire season, season. There was no chance.
I had some Utah futures last year as well. I was like, okay, he'll be back. He'll be back. And then you're like, will he be back? It gets more and more stressful and anxious every week. And hopefully he is back this year.
Kyle Whittingham's not going to give us an honest answer. And I look at this week's game at Utah State. This spread opened at 22, pretty quickly fell to 21.5. The total opened at 48, pretty quickly fell to 47. Now, 48 to 47 is falling off a key number, but that was the opening market moves. That, to me, was that the total fell off 48 because it was arguably mispriced. Now, as we get updates this week, non-update updates, vague updates, trying to dodge the question updates from Kyle Whittingham, the spread has fallen to 20.5, obviously crossing a key number. The total has fallen to 46.5, not much of a move. To me, that says there's value still in the total. You look at Utah backup quarterback Isaac Wilson, probably the starter if Cam Rising's out. Quote, I've got to be a game manager. I mean, I'm going to have those opportunities to score, but I want to be a game manager first. Kyle Whittingham said the game plan when Isaac Wilson went in was just to protect the ball and maintain the lead. If this is what we're getting with Utah this week, because Cam Rising may or may not be hurt, but probably he's going to sit out because they have a bigger game in 2 weeks. Yes. Give me the Utah State under 46.5 available at neg 108 at Bet Rivers. I am basing this almost entirely on Cam Rising not playing. Now, if he plays, they could go up 35-0 and shut it down. That'd still be fine. That's definitely possible. But if he doesn't play, Utah's going to try to go up 14-0 and sit down. That is what I'm betting on. I will probably eventually, if we maintain this uncertain status, I'm going to take that to mean there is no Cam Rising. And I'll probably personally add first half under, team total under, team total under. Because if they are without Cam Rising, they know their offense is a worry. And the entire goal needs to be let our defense win the game.
Let the defense win the game, run that football. And once again, another rivalry game. It gets a little funky, but Utah State, I don't think, is in the place that they.
This is less of a rivalry game because what's the old Yankees Red Sox thought? Like, it's not a rivalry if the Red Sox can't win one. It's not a rivalry if Utah State can't get a win.
Correct. So
now, how about you close us off for our midweek show here?
Yeah, we're gonna go to a team that I've talked about a few times on the pod already, and we're gonna take Vanderbilt to go over its team total of 29.5 when they take on Georgia State this weekend. So if you listened to our week zero preview, season preview future bet show, I took Vanderbilt to go over their team regular season win total of 2.5, and we are at 2. After 2 weeks, Doug, and I had them down as a loss for that Virginia Tech game to start the season. So we're playing with house money, it feels like here. 10.5-point favorites for this matchup against Georgia State. This is a Georgia State team that will try to keep up with them offensively because the defense is not going to get the job done. They rank 85th right now in defensive success rate. They gave up 35 points to Georgia Tech. They barely beat Chattanooga last week. So this is a team that like is not in our previous talk. We talked about how they would be one of the lower end Sun Belt teams. So this is why we liked that bet initially, because we had Vandy getting the win in this spot. I think they do. They've been so much fun with Diego Pavia as their quarterback. They're running some triple option stuff. We'll just keep the Service Academy stuff going all show long here. They've run some really fun schemes with Pavia as quarterback. It's just been exciting to watch. I'm sure everyone in Nashville is just having fun with this Vandy team at this point. I'm sure it's going to come crashing down once they start playing some SEC games. But right now, let the people of Nashville enjoy this run while it lasts. And I think they get this number pretty easily here. They put 34 on Virginia Tech. I think they could get to 30 against Georgia State.
They go get that third win. All due respect to the Commodores, you don't care how fast it comes crashing down because you got your win total overcast right away.
Right.
I do want to note, I've said it, now this will be the third time today I've said it, teams that replaced their coach in mid-January or later, Georgia State was one of the latest. Their coach left after spring practice had started. This is another one of those teams that it's just the roster was decimated by the way the portal treats coaches leaving. It's a tough, tough life. So in that regard alone, I'm in alignment with you. Now, Andrew, we're running a little quick. I want to blindside you with something that we mentioned a week ago, and I failed to remember to talk about it on Saturday.
Okay.
We said we were going to discuss who is number two in the ACC. Oof. Who is? Now, I pulled up the BetMGM odds. They're in front of me right now. Miami, the clear favorite, plus 140. Clemson, plus 290, pretty clearly the number two. It then is a huge jump. Louisville plus 650, North Carolina State 14-1, Virginia Tech 16-1, Syracuse and SMU at 20-1 each. I am curious, if you were placing a ACC bet right now, would you bet it on Miami or would you go find value somewhere else?
This pains me, like, because we have talked so much. Shout out to producer Mario, who is no longer with us. His namesake here, Mario Cristobal's teams have always just disappointed us, but it's looked really good so far, like so good that it's like making me consider the fact that Miami is the clear-cut favorite in this division right now. Cam Ward is getting a lot of deserved Heisman love right now. That looks like one of the better transfer, we talk about transfer portal pickups. His is looking like, this move is looking really, really smart by Miami to get Cam Ward right now. I think it's Miami. I think I'm sticking with Miami. I still don't have faith. I know they just burned me so bad. Klubnik just threw the ball all over the place on App State after I was just like, oh, Kate Klubnik's a bum. And then he just goes out and torches my bet. But against a Miami defense, that might not be a team that, like Georgia, is going to be really scary on that defensive front seven. And I don't know how he'll respond to that. Syracuse has been kind of fun to this point. Kyle McCord, like, sure, he's been lighting it up a little bit, but I just don't have a lot of faith in any of those other teams right now. I was high on Virginia Tech going into the season, but then they lost to Vandy, so now I'm a little discombobulated about Virginia Tech at the moment as well. Miami might be the play.
I hear you. I'm not going to agree with you, one, because that wouldn't be good content, and two, I generally don't agree with you. You were saying Virginia Correct. Tech. I think we've learned with Virginia Tech, if you can frustrate their run game, they have a problem. If Kyron Jones can't get into a rhythm running the ball, he can't get into a rhythm throwing the ball.
I feel like they're not well coached. I think that, like, they don't, or at least in terms of game plan scheming, they need to just let him kind of feel out a game more than they've allowed him to do at this point, because it's looked rough at this point.
That regard, and you make an excellent point, that Vanderbilt, they opened the game so slowly. How do you get to that game, your season opener, and not have some juice? And then you almost take the ball out of Kyron Jones' hand for way too long. They had to finally give it back to him to make that comeback. So realizing that, I'm going to fade Virginia Tech in this conversation. Anybody with a good defensive line or a good defensive mind should be able to handle them. I'm clearly going to fade North Carolina State because that defense just got gashed. It's not what it used to be. And a slow game isn't going to go in their regard either, because Grayson McCall, frankly, has looked rough. It's not a good fit with the Robert and I offense. And then we get to Louisville, and I have sat here for more than a year now and said, this team is not as good as people think. And I still maintain that they are based entirely on explosive plays, which you cannot rely on. I'm going to continue to take Clemson at plus 290. If for no other reason then if we get a Miami-Clemson matchup right now on a neutral field, they'd be about a four-point game, a four-point spread. So if I have a plus 290 ticket on a four-point underdog of the first weekend of December, I'm going to feel pretty good about that value.
Yeah, yeah, you are. And I fully expect that that will be the ACC championship game.
Let's hope so, because there are some of these championship games that are shaping up where I can already see, like, it's going to take some topsy-turvy for me to be interested. I'd be interested in Clemson-Miami and the new guard versus the old. It could have some fun. But that's enough about early December. We should get out of here today. We should remind everybody we're going to be live 9 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. Like, subscribe to College Football 134 to show us you are getting the appropriate Tuesday value long before that Saturday show. Andrew, why don't you recap your bets, and then we'll get out of here.
So we've got Arizona and Kansas State over 58, Air Force Baylor under 21.5 in the first half, and Vanderbilt over its team total of 29.5.
As seems to be the case, I have more than you. I have the Colorado State team total over 24.5 at neg 115. That is my way of fading Colorado this week. I have West Virginia neg 2.5 against Pittsburgh, available at neg 110 at Caesars, because I don't think Pittsburgh is anywhere near what the world thinks it is, and we're about to see that clearly. I have Texas State plus 105 against a sleep-deprived Arizona State. Notre Dame by 10 at Purdue, available at neg 108 because of the overreaction on the Irish. And I'm taking Utah State under 46.5, also available at neg 108 because I do not expect Cam Rising to play. That is Andrew Cayley at Covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer at D_Farmer, and we will see you early on Saturday morning.
Can't wait.